You're listening to Radio Dharma, presented by Hindu University of America. I'm your host, Shilpa Agarwal, fiction author and faculty at HUA. Modern life can feel uncertain. Sanatana Dharma shines a light on the eternal truths that lead to inner transformation, fulfillment, and joy. Tune in to your highest frequency every week on Radio Dharma. Today, I'm excited to welcome our guest, Dr. Indu Vishwanathan. Induji holds an MA and doctorate in education from Teachers College, Columbia University, and a BA in economics from Cornell University. She is the co-founder and co-director of Understanding Hindophobia, an initiative to increase public consciousness and discourse about Hindophobia, build allyship, and nurture scholarship. Induji is the director of education at Hindu University of America and will be teaching a class this quarter titled Understanding Hindophobia. Welcome, Induji.
Thank you so much, Shilpaji, and it's exciting to be here with you. I'm happy to be speaking with you today.
It's wonderful to have you. So let's start with a working definition of Hindophobia. What is it? Why is it?
So the official working definition of Hindophobia is that it's a set of antagonistic, destructive, and derogatory attitudes and behaviors towards Sanatana Dharma, Hinduism, and Hindus that may manifest as prejudice, fear, or hatred. I think, and it goes on, that's sort of the headline definition. I think the most important part that I pull up in this course is that Hindophobic rhetoric reduces all of Sanatana Dharma to a rigid, oppressive, and regressive tradition, and it denies the persecution of Hindus while disproportionately painting Hindus as violent. And all of this is used to justify the dissolution and also the external reformation of you know, the body of indigenous traditions known as Sanatana Dharma.
And I'm wondering, as a second generation Hindu American, you've grown up here in America, when did you first become aware of this negative narrative around Hinduism? And second part of the question is, what kind of impact did it have on you?
So I would say that there were certainly glimmers of it in my own schooling in elementary school. You know, you get to the chapter on India, on Hinduism, and everything is very reductive, right? So there are those glimmers. And at the same time, you know, I grew up in a community where until my sister started school, I was the only non-white person in the entire school. That said, there was a large Jewish American population there. So there was religious diversity to some degree. And so I remember when we got to this chapter, I think I was in seventh grade, and I stood up and I was very shy, which people now don't believe, but I was very shy up until around then. And I stood up and I said, you know, this is not my India. This is not my Hinduism. And to his credit, you know, we're talking about the mid 80s. Our social studies teacher said, well, why don't you tell us what your India is? Why don't you tell us what your Hinduism is? And he gave me space to really express myself. No, of course, I wasn't like a very necessarily competent representative of everything, but I was able to share, you know, the sort of counter narratives to whatever was happening, or, you know, in a very reductive way in the textbooks. So I would say that's probably my first glimmer into it. And then, of course, media, then Indiana Jones came out and the Temple of Doom came out when I was that age. And so I would say, it was the form that it existed up until then was largely sort of a somewhat innocent ignorance around it in terms of my peers and the people around me. But in terms of media, there wasn't really any representation at all. And then Temple of Doom comes out, and all of a sudden it's, you know, we're brain eating savages, right? And so then it's really in your face. But then it's so extreme, right? Like it's such an extreme representation that it's really easy to point out, right? So we went from nothing really to this really, really representation of savageness. And of course, this is around the time when you had Sally Struthers on the television telling us to save children in Africa and India, and all of these images of poor brown and black children around the world, and this sort of American benevolence towards these savage lands, these savage, and it's unspoken, but it's spoken because these are all Christian fundraising organizations, these unconverted savages, right? So it's all kind of tied in, but it's like both in your face and also subtle, and there's this benevolence and all of it. But by and large, I would say, and I don't know what your experience was, because you grew up, you know, in the same era, we were kind of just left alone to practice Hinduism. Like, you have these little spurts of things coming up, but you're left alone to practice your own Hinduism. No one's trying to interfere in your actual practice. And then, of course, you have the Dot Busters in the late 80s in New Jersey, and I grew up in New York. You hear about it, but it's not something that was happening in my community. This is pre-internet, pre-social media. And so you read about it in the newspaper, but it's not impacting you. You're not getting the constant messaging about it in the same way that you do now. And then in college, the same thing. You know, it was a very personal, my Hinduism was very personal to me. I didn't study religion or try to learn about India or Hinduism in any way in college. I kept that as a part of my own personal study and didn't turn to the university to learn about it. So I think that actually probably buffered me a bit. It created some kind of membrane, because you know, the early 90s were the beginning of a lot of these South Asian studies departments that were expressly and overtly Hinduphobic. People were still not identifying as South Asian back then. It was still just Indian. I think it was when I would say so, it kind of stayed at that level. And then I started seeing things turning up a little bit in a funny way, or in an upsetting way, around 9/11. You know, I'm a New Yorker. I lived in New York. I was actually getting my teaching degree on 9/11. And I'm brown. And at that time, I used to wear bindis regularly. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be on public transportation and I would get glared at because I'm wearing a bindi and I'm brown. Of course, you know, it creates this funny thing where you're like, well, like, this means actually that I'm not a Muslim, but you shouldn't be looking at me no matter what, because I'm just the same person that was riding on the bus with you on September 10th. Like, why are you suddenly looking at me this way? Right.
That's right.
And so that was definitely, there was definitely this, like, this sifting, because then, I was getting my teaching degree at Teachers College, which is, you know, the elementary elementary ed degree is committed to social justice. And so you saw all of a sudden people talking about Islamophobia in ways that were really important at the time, right? Because we were teaching in schools where there were large Muslim populations and children were frightened that they would go home and their dads would have been taken, pulled off the streets. You know, so that was very real. And it wasn't just theoretical. It wasn't just my city. It was, no, it's where we're going to teach tomorrow morning.
That's right.
So it was really important for us to engage in that. But I remember distinctly, seeing how now Islam was incorporated into the broader social justice vernacular. I saw, you know, we did talk, although minimally, about anti-Semitism. We talked about other forms of discrimination, but there was no mention ever really of Hindus or Hinduism. We were not newsworthy enough. Not enough had happened, nor were we, you know, discriminated against enough. It's just like, we just kind of didn't exist. And so that's kind of how I rationalized it, right? Because I believed so much in what I was doing as an educator who was committed to teaching from the perspective that, you know, you can, teaching children how to think critically, how to ask questions about the world is really one of the main purposes of education, towards thinking and asking and reflecting on ourselves. You know, the purpose of my being a teacher, the purpose of being a student, is to learn how you can make the world a better place and That's not right. just take from it. Right. That was my stance as an educator. This is a really long answer to a very,
it's okay.
So then I was out in the world, I was teaching, I became a mom, lived in India for a couple of years. And then when we came back, I I became involved with Yes for Schools, which is now called Sky Schools. So I'm a part of the Art of Living community, and the schools program that's part of the International Association for Human Values goes into schools and teaches yoga, meditation, pranayama, under the sort of larger umbrella of social emotional learning. And so they teach students and teachers and parents, and basically anyone who's in the building. And I was the research director for that nationally. And I started encountering the ways in which Hindu concepts had to be secularized or distilled in order for them to be acceptable, because they were equated with religion as opposed to a different ontological or a different framework for understanding, you know, who we are in relationship to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I began seeing the erasure of Hinduism from those spaces. So schools and communities were benefiting from Vedic practices, but Hinduism was actively being erased in order mm-hmm. to justify, in order to allow those things to exist in schools. And so that for me was a huge, huge red flag. And then when you went into research communities, the ways in which those practices were legitimized in the sciences had nothing to do with how we understand these things within yoga. It was mm-hmm. all about cortisol tests and fMRIs and surveys, self-report surveys that were not really about self-awareness in the ways that a yogi might think about self-awareness.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very powerful.
Thank you for listening to Radio Dharma, presented by Hindu University of America. Stay tuned for part 2 of our program right after this break.